12. Transporting the Dead. In her 37 years, Miss Hackandotte had seen hundreds, if not thousands, of bodies, and now she was carrying load after load of cadavers to the island. She had been at it for weeks, and there were three more sitting here now in the car of the airship Hera as she floated across the Pacific. This last batch had been from New Zealand, brought to her by desperate prospectors who had yet to find a vein of gold. Another hanged man, his neck too long. Someone who'd died in a mine by suffocation, the body in pristine condition, a particularly valuable find. And a man who'd ingested poison after losing all his money in a card game. He was an odd shade of yellow. The ice coffins had been designed by Dr. Hyde, showcasing his trademark ingenuity. Despite the humidity and warmth of the Pacific, the ice melted slowly so the bodies stayed cold, in the same state they had been in not hours before their deaths. Her orders had been to keep the coffins closed, but her curiosity got the better of her, and she opened them one by one to gaze down on the faces of the dead, hardened, muscular men who had lived tough lives. The combination of gases and cold kept them looking as though they could snap their eyes open at any moment. She mused about how she would look after death and shrugged it off. Death was not something worth dwelling on. Fearlessness is better than a faint heart, her father had told her many times. The timing of her death had been written long ago, and she could not prevent it. It was an important but tedious task to transport the dead back to Atticus. In total, she had brought 107 bodies to the catacombs of the Clockwork Guild's lair. There was something sacred about it. She laughed. Sacred? When had she ever been concerned with spiritual matters? The trip took 3 days. She did love being airborne. From here she could look to the northwest, where the giant shipyards on the coast of China were building 3 new steam-powered guild battleships, the Hydra, the Gorgon, and the Medusa. They would be larger and more powerful than the Griffin, her last battleship. No navy would be able to stand in their way. Each ship would be accompanied by a fleet of steam-powered Triton vessels. All nations would tremble at the sight of this armada. She had no desire to be the captain of any seafaring vessel. If she was to be captain of anything, it would be in the air. No nation, not England, nor Germany, nor France, had an airship with as much weaponry and speed as the Hera. With enough coal and food, she could strike London and vanish into the night before they even knew who had dealt the blow. She imagined having 100 airships at her command. No, 1,000. The stunned world would be in awe of her. "I want a perfect landing this time," she said to the pilot. The wind was blowing out of the northwest, and the crosswind would make it difficult. "Yes, Captain," the pilot replied. She noted that his hand was steady on the wheel. Good. Only the best of the guild soldiers could work with her. Below them, 3 small Triton boats were cutting through the water at a speed she estimated to be over 24 knots. In a short time, there would be 100 of them. The guild master had some plan or other at play, but he was always so secretive about his grand intentions. Even Dr. Hyde, whom she could twist into whatever shape she desired, had been equally secretive. The pilot lowered the flaps, and a gust of wind banged the Hera against the dock, making the ship rattle and shudder. It was enough to set Miss Hackandotte's nerves on edge. She grabbed the pilot with her metal hand, ignoring his pleading, and lifted him over the side of the open car. "You'll land perfectly next time." Then she dropped him. He fell several feet before grabbing onto the landing rope and slipping down to the ground. She was disappointed. Not even a broken leg. As the soldiers began unloading the cargo, she climbed down the net ladder and strode up the hill towards Dr. Hyde's cave. The Crystal Palace glowed with the red light of the setting sun, the dull Pacific evening still warm and humid. She felt as though she were being spied on from the palace's observation deck. That was how the guildmaster wanted her to feel. Watched. He had numerous telescopes and would often look down on his creations. Perhaps he was peering at her right now, as she marched up the hill and into the cave. She straightened her shoulders. Dr. Cornelius Hyde looked just as he had the last time she'd seen him, nearly a week ago, standing under the gaslight holding 2 test tubes. The man, old as he was, rarely stopped working. If she were to make a sudden noise, he would startle and drop the tube, smashing it and destroying the contents. She had done that only once before and set his work back by days. So she cleared her throat lightly until he looked up.
"Ingrid, it is such a pleasure to see you."
"And you as well, Cornelius. I have brought you more fine specimens. How does your work go?"
"It is frustrating, Ingrid. Typhon was such a success. He made me feel I was born to design human beings."
He paused.
"That does sound somewhat mad, does it not? But I see so much potential."
He lifted his hands to emphasize his point.
"Every molecule, every cell is connected, run through with veins and nerves. And with Typhon, I was able to animate it all using that metamorph's finger."
"Metamorph?"
"Agent Modo. He's a metamorph. Like a tadpole that can turn into a frog and back again. Except he likely can change into any human form he imagines. There is something about his cells, his blood, that combined with the right electrical impulses brought Typhon to life."
"You do remember who brought you his finger, don't you?" she said slyly.
"Of course, Ingrid. I praise you every day for that. But I need more of his tissues."
He pointed at the empty cages where several chimpanzees had once been. There was also an aquarium on four wrought iron legs, inside which was a large octopus. It had seven arms.
"All other attempts have failed. The secret is in his flesh."
"Would you like me to bring him here, piece by piece?" she asked.
"Ah, if only you could. But the Guildmaster has promised me more material very soon. Typhon was only the beginning, Ingrid."
He grabbed her by the hand.
"Imagine if you could live forever in a larger and more powerful body. Imagine that, never breaking down. It would be glorious," she admitted. "Well, it is within my grasp. We are marching towards a beautiful and brave new world."
Perhaps he was mad, but he hadn't been wrong yet.